Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Jake Fulnick with you guys. We have Jax Gregory running the board as well. Andrew Hody behind the glass, and you heard him on the 2020s. With the Cavs coming up in about 30 minutes, it's where I want to start with you guys, because I think it needs to be addressed, sort of a conversation on DeAndre Hunter. And the Cavs' plan here as they get ready to head into the post-All-Star break version of what they're going to play and what it needs to look like down the back stretch. We talked yesterday sort of about the actual expectations and what things necessarily have to look like. And a lot of it comes down to how this group works with DeAndre Hunter and how it all comes full circle with that unit and with that group and how he plays. And to me, that's more of a successful post-All-Star break than anything you're going to see is sort of numerically, right? That's measurable. Nothing that you're going to show me from a Cavs perspective, taking the one seed, aside from staying healthy, because I think that's obviously number one, but I would genuinely rather see a good result with DeAndre Hunter on the floor than it necessarily translate directly into wins. If it takes you 20 games to figure that out and down the last eight, it feels like you finally have it. I would rather that be the case than this team just continue to slip by games and it feels like DeAndre Hunter never truly finds his footing with the Cavs from an on-court chemistry standpoint. Right? And so we went over all of that, but is we have to go down this post-All-Star break stretch and we have to assess the DeAndre Hunter trade. I think there's a lot of ways that you can view this as a success and probably very few ways that you can view it as a negative, but there's one that stands out to me because success here is pretty simple. I think you make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and you give the Celtics a run. The DeAndre Hunter trade is pretty much a success. If you look like you have a chance to beat Boston, you probably look at the Hunter trade and go, oh, yeah, that was going to be a big part. I mean, unless he completely flops out in the series and you're practically pulling him out of the rotation, he's so bad. Then, yeah, I think you're looking at this as probably a successful overall thing that happened. You see the team grow together. You see chemistry go down on the court. And you'll say, okay, I got rid of the Caris LeVert contract and got something back for it. We moved off of George Niang. Sure, we'll have to do some adjustments with how money's going to work here next year. But overall, this team should have gotten better. They get added a small forward, an athletic small forward that they needed. But where things, I think, in my mind, can sort of go off the rails and head in the opposite direction, where it actually gets to become a little bit of a problem. I think if it's as simple as if DeAndre Hunter really doesn't insert himself in the starting lineup, it's on the brink right then and there, in my eyes, of that trade being a fail. You went out, and your goal in this trade market was to get somebody that puts you closer to a Boston and keeps you competitive in having a competitive advantage over the teams like the Knicks and the Bucks. And if you want to throw like the Pacers in that mix, sure, have fun, go ahead. But it was to keep you competitive against them, but really to try to bring you even from a defensive standpoint more than anything with the Boston Celtics. So if we go through this entire process and you tell me at the end of it that DeAndre Hunter is your sixth man and he's coming off the bench, I just don't think that does it for me. I want him to match up with Boston. That's the entire reason I brought him in. Had you brought in a Cam Johnson, I don't think there would have been much of a question. No matter how well that Max Strus played with the starting unit, I don't think you're going to have Cam Johnson coming off the bench. But you decided to go with DeAndre Hunter, which, again, fully behind, fully support, fine move in my eyes. But if you have him not out there to start the game, if I go into a series against Boston and DeAndre Hunter's not on the floor to start the game, in some degree, what was the point? Because we've pointed out that the slow starts with the Celtics that the Cavs have had, a bad first half the first time around, an abysmal first quarter the third time around in the two games that you've lost. That's what you're trying to avoid. You're trying to keep the game on an even playing field the whole way through. And the way that you do that is, well, keep Jason Tatum in check, keep Jaylen Brown in check, and have the defensive or the defense of the starting unit match in a degree what the offense of the Celtics starting unit is going to bring out. And Max Strus is a fine defender. I probably undervalue him as a defender to where he actually is, but he's not DeAndre Hunter. He's not 6'7". He does not have the ability to stand there and to guard in the same way that DeAndre Hunter has, right? You can't stand there if you're Max Strus and actually line up with a Jason Tatum and affect his shot in the same way just based off of metrics alone, off of physical, measurable things, including height, wingspan, and everything else that is going to allow DeAndre Hunter to stand in there and cause a problem. Is not going to be the same for Max Strus. If you made me take a guess, Boston would more than welcome Max Strus in a starting lineup against the Cavs. Bring him on. That is exactly what I'm looking for. I want you to go through and show me Max Strus in a starting lineup. Because at that point, I know that I have a chance to make a real run in this first quarter and to set the bar and sort of jump out to the lead that's going to allow me not to coast through the rest of the game, but to understand that I have the advantage and it's going to take me giving it up and going on a bad run to get rid of that. And again, that's sort of been the takeaway for the Cavs in their two losses to Boston this year has been, okay, you've dug yourself a hole and you've done a great job to push your way into starting to climb out of it, but you've never actually gotten through that entire climb in the games that you trailed in that you lost. You got really close, but you take away the one quarter and you make that quarter even just less of an embarrassment for you, and you come out of that game with a win. You win those types of matchups in a way that you just can't. DeAndre Hunter should make that an easier feat. It should be the difference maker in those games to take away from those long stretches, to take away from the points there where you are going on these abysmal runs where Boston is just pulling away and having their way with you because, well, either Jason Tatum's open or helping create for everybody else, and the same thing's on Jaylen Brown, and you don't have a proper matchup. You're having to overhelp, which is allowing guys like Al Horford to start to bury you. The Cavs have not played very well defensively through the course of the game against the Boston Celtics this year. If you're going to win, you have to learn not only to keep up with them in a degree offensively, but on the other side of that, sort of slow them down from a defensive perspective. And again, DeAndre Hunter is what does that for me. So if you have him coming off the bench, to me, it's all for naught. You might as well have gone out there and just picked a guy off the side. Like, you wanted to just try to shut him down. You could have just done what you're doing right now, gone and got Javonte Green off the buyout market and just stuck him on Jaylen Brown and said, okay, well, we'll see how this thing goes. Right? Plug him in for Max Strus, and all right, at least we know that the perimeter defense there on one of these guys is going to be locked down, and we'll just try and bank on it. Or we'll just send him out there as sort of a specialty off the bench and keep the defensive unit going. DeAndre Hunter is supposed to be not a fix-all, but a guy that can do multiple things that you're looking for. A guy that can keep your offensive prowess intact and keep you competitive on the offensive end while also being a massive upgrade on the defensive end. And I just don't want that guy coming off the bench. Max Strus has proven, and listen, he's played very well at the starters. I get that. I understand that the numbers point to Max Strus being a great fit with the starting unit. I'm not just throwing that out the window. But again, the entire purpose behind making this move was to get an upgrade with that spot. You had no solid three. You were looking for the tall athletic wing, and you have one. Max Drews can be that sort of spark plug off the bench, almost in some sort of way, a type of six man for you between him and Ty Jerome. But I don't need him to be in my starting lineup. I don't need him to go out there and be the main difference maker for the Cavs against the Celtics, because it's not going to happen. He does not have that ability. It's been seen, done that, and it's gone through. Like, if we get to what you play the Celtics coming up, I believe on the 28th is your matchup against the Celtics, just in a little over a week. If you get to that spot and DeAndre Hunter's not in the starting lineup, I'm not saying that it's completely, like, it's a miss. I'm not saying DeAndre Hunter has to be in the starting lineup, but you're not going to get a feel of what this team should be and what this matchup should be against the Celtics. It's going to be a miss when you roll around to the playoffs and he's not there. Again, there's reasons why it works with Strus in the starting lineup, but for no reason should that actually be a massive downgrade. Like, what is happening with this lineup right now that Max Strus is doing that DeAndre Hunter can't? Again, both can shoot the three. Both are strong defensively, and I pointed out the differences for DeAndre Hunter and what makes him, in my eyes, a better defender, especially in a matchup like that. It's not like DeAndre's incapable of making a cut. Because I know that something that Kenny points to all the time is, well, we really like the way that Max stays often aggressive off the ball and makes cuts and makes them in the right spots and timely. Sure, I don't see why DeAndre Hunter can't do that as well. Your offense shouldn't be taking a massive step back, and if it is taking a step back, you should be upgrading just that much, if not more, on the defensive end. You told me you had to get rid of 3 second-round picks, you had to get rid of 2 pick swaps, and you had to get rid of 2 players, and for what everybody was worried about, you had to go through and shake up this chemistry. I didn't do that for another bench piece. I didn't go out there expecting to get a guy to sub in 8 minutes through the first quarter. I got that for a guy who can plug into the starting lineup and feel confident going into every single game that I'm going to have the guy that I need to step up when it comes to the big moments, when it comes to having to lock down Jason Tatum early in the first quarter, help us get out to a lead. And I would hope so that at the end of the game, that story is the same, that DeAndre Hunter is the guy that you want out there. Again, I think from an offensive and a defensive standpoint, he offers you more than practically Max Strus has his entire career. I don't see how coming off the bench is going to be the solution. But, you know, we'll go out there. We'll see tonight. Again, taking on the Nets tonight at 7:30, returning from the All-Star break. You can get your thoughts off on that as well, whether or not the DeAndre Hunter trade is a fail if he's coming off the bench. I say yes. 216-474-0092. You can also get to me on X at Volnick Jake, V-O-L-I-N-E-C Jake. So we can get to our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. A lot to get to tonight. Some really good stuff, including our quarterback big board, as we do every night at 740. We add a Chiefs backup, former Eagle. Can we call him a Super Bowl champion? Sort of, not really. Carson Wentz, we add him to the list as well. We'll talk to Jake Rill, Orioles. He's a beat reporter over there for MLB.com. He'll have everything that you could ask for on the Guardians' newest edition in John Means and what we should expect when he does eventually return from his second Tommy John surgery. Get a grip at 9, a whole lot more later, including reacting to the Cavs game and bringing in Jax Gregory for Change Your Mind. But right now, 216-474-0092. Is DeAndre Hunter, is the trade for him a fail if he comes off a bench as the Cavs get ready to take on the Nets? It's Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan. You didn't go out and make the trade. You didn't try and get DeAndre Hunter is like, this could be a really good bench piece for us, right? We'll give up 3 seconds, swap 2 first-round picks, and give up 2... Am I being too nice if I say 2 productive pieces off the bench? Am I being too nice to Caris LeVert and George Yang? No, I don't think so. I'll say 2 productive pieces off the bench, on and off the court. That way we'll leave it vague. You give up 2 productive pieces, and you didn't do it to get another productive piece back? Like, if all you wanted was a guy who could average 19, Karis LeVert, could give him the minutes, he could probably average you 19. Now, one game will drop 30, the next game will drop 4. But it'll eventually, you know, come out to that 19 range if you want to play him 30 minutes a game. He'll probably get somewhere close to that. Harris can get you the buckets. It's you brought him in for a specific reason. It's because you looked at the Eastern Conference. You looked at the teams among the top, yourselves, the Celtics, the Knicks, and you said, okay, a lot of good forwards that play for those teams, right? Mikal Bridges, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Don't think that I'm necessarily feeling comfortable going through and guarding them with Isaac Okoro or Dean Wade or Max Strus. And some combination of that in the starting lineup, one of those guys plugged in with the core four, we're not going to be able to stop, especially when you look at Boston, the top two guys there. You're just not going to have an answer for at least one of them. Jaylen Brown's played really well against you this season. Can we try and figure out why that is? Because I could tell you, I could begin a pretty good portion on why that is. It's because Donovan Mitchell is sitting there guarding him. Okay, if he's the one who has the hot hand, DeAndre Hunter, get over there. We'll throw Mobley on Jason Tatum if we have to, right? Like, we'll switch something up to make this work. We'll find a combination to have this go down, but clearly playing a little bit of small ball against them and tossing somebody that's 6'4", 6'5", into the mix is not going to be the answer. You did it to get big, and you did it to get big in the starting lineup. So I think when you look at this thing, that's what I have to do. That's the end goal that I have to get to, is improving the starting lineup, and that only happens with DeAndre Hunter starting. 216-474-0092. Let's go out to the phones. Jerry's in Cleveland. Wanted to chime in. What's going on, Jerry?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good. I have to disagree with you. Number one, I think you're making it too simple. Because to me, the most important thing, it doesn't matter to me if he starts or not, but is he the player that's going to be in the last 5 minutes of the game when you really need something to be done? Because a lot of times having that person come off the bench can throw the other team off. And as far as the trade, he could do things that we know Karis LeVert and what's the other guy's name?
George Niang.
Yeah, he could do things they can't do, you know, as far as defending. He could shoot better than Dean Wade. Maybe not as good as, well, Max Strus is inconsistent, so I guess he can shoot better. But I don't mind him coming off the bench, you know, because I go back a long ways with basketball, and I've seen a lot of times when the best player doesn't come, well, the best player does come off the bench, but they give you significant minutes. They give you more minutes. And then the last 5 minutes of the game in a close game, is who you want out there. Now, if you'd rather have Max Strus out there than him last 5 minutes of the game, unless Max Strus is shooting the lights out, which can happen, then maybe it's a disappointment. But I doubt if that's going to happen.
I'm right there with you, Jerry, and I fully agree with you, and I appreciate the call. I fully agree with you. The last 5 minutes of the game are much more important to me than the first 5 minutes. I think it's more telling the guys who are out there for the last 5 minutes. But again, I stare at the Cavs and their problems that they've run into with the Celtics. And you know, it's a small sample size. I'm basing this off of two total games that they've lost against Boston this year. Right? You've played them three total times, and twice it's come out to be this way. But you look at all three games they've played, the fourth quarter has not been the problem. They've been dominant in the fourth quarter against the Celtics. I mean, you've outscored them 29-27 in a loss. You outscored them 30-25 in a loss. And then in your win, your four-point win, you outscored them 43-27. The fourth quarter, they've had figured out. By the end of the game, when everything is coming to its finale, the Cavs have been on the winning end of that quarter every single time. The problem is you have to get it to be a competitive game within that quarter. And if you're the Cavs, at some point you'd like to be the team battling from ahead in that point rather than battling from behind. And if you look at the Cavs' struggles against the Celtics specifically, it's been the first half and the first quarter. And against teams in general, it's been the first quarter as well as the third quarter. Right? When you come out, when you start the half, and when you start the game, the Cavs several times have come out flat. You just haven't had any energy to you. You haven't had any sort of demeanor to you to start games, and you've come out either just slow shooting the ball or just not doing anything. And honestly, I think this wraps in to what Joe Varden was saying on with the Morning Boys earlier with Ken and Anthony, where he basically said there's a certain label slapped on this team that has been there for years and still has yet to go away.
When they were double digits in O, my colleague, David Aldridge, he wrote that they're great, but, you know, maybe they're a little too nice. And that was when they were double digits in O. They were on their way to 15-0. And then if you think about the losses that they've had this year, most of the time it's because they were the smaller team on the perimeter and got pushed around. This doesn't mean necessarily that it's true, and they are going to have every opportunity to really prove this come April and May and hopefully June. But if you talk about labels, that's still it. That is still it. You know, until they've done it on the biggest stage, like, that's going to haunt them.
It comes into a conversation. I think it's a good one because you look at the Cavs and it wraps into the point we're talking about because of these slow starts where they don't come out physical and they don't come out on fire in any sort of way. And not that they lack an identity, but to a degree in the game, in the start of a game, it feels like they lack an identity. They lack a leadership, someone to turn to in the beginning of those games. The Cavs still having nice attached to their name, I think is something that is odd for a 44-10 team. It is in the sort of an odd one out type of category because you look at these teams, and not necessarily that all of them are mean and are throwing punches and, you know, are just absolutely physical and take it to you, but in some degree, yeah, the greatest teams that we've looked at even in the regular season have had a little bit of that swagger to them. You think about the Cavs in the LeBron era, there was that kind of swagger to them. I mean, you have Tristan Thompson on the roster right now, right? That's partially what he brought. When he was your starting power forward, Tristan was not afraid to be the one that, okay, if things aren't working outside, sure, I might not be who you turn to offensively night in and night out, but I'll go bang down low if I have to. But on the offensive and defensive end, I'll make sure that you don't want me, shoulder to chest. Or you're not going to try to back me down because I'm going to make sure that you feel it at the end of the day. The Cavs almost missed that right now. Don't get any ideas over there, Jax. Calm down. Calm down. No ideas. All right? We're trying to avoid that kind of verbiage, all right? I was trying to wheel it in a way that wasn't going there. All right? There was a lot of ways it could have went worse. You got to give me my credit where credit's due, okay? I balanced it mostly well.
Didn't mean for you to see my face.
Yeah, well, listen, there's only one screen between us, and there's a big gap, and it's very visual, okay? I can see your face more times than not. But no, like, genuinely, there's nothing that this team does that shows me, like, just crazy physical team. And by the way, DeAndre Hunter, I think, helps that out. I think he helps you in that sense that, again, just an athletic 6'8 wing is going to sort of bring a little bit of that mentality. But from your bigs, you know that's not really what they bring to the table, right? Evan Mobley is not going to be somebody who is constantly fighting in the post, in the paint, and at the end of the day, you're walking away going, man, like, I'm battered and bruised from having a battle with Evan Mobley. Jared Allen, it's the same thing. Sure, Jarrett brings a little bit more, I think, of an aggressiveness in the paint to his game, but still, you look at Jared Allen as sort of the gentle giant. He'll have some violations on the rim every once in a while, right? He might, listen, Jared, the rim has a family. But when it comes to other players, other than time that he gave a two-arm check a little bit above the waist and above the shoulders to Asar Thompson, that's about all we have. Everything else points to Jared Allen, the gentle giant. So, yeah, as you go through and you battle back and forth between what this team is and the physicality they bring, when they have the nice label attached to them, I don't think that's something that you can just live with and keep going on. Like, the Cavs are going to have to find a way to change that idea and have a little bit more of a meaner mentality, for a lack of better words, right? Even a Warriors, a team that was just dedicated to shooting the three ball in the times that they were facing off with the Cavs, you also had, as much as I despise him, you had your Draymond Green. And you always had somebody to sort of go around with him and be on that other side of it too, like a Zaza Pachulia, as much as we hate that name, but like an enforcer, somebody that if you went into the paint, you realized, hey, he might commit some fouls. He probably will foul out a game here and there, but he's not going to let you get your points easy. Right now, you take it inside on the Cavs, and you're walking away probably getting pretty easy points here. Right? It is not difficult, and if you're not going to get them, sure. Is Evan Mobley going to rack up blocks? Is Jared Allen going to wrap up blocks? Yeah, but they're not going to be overly physical. You're going to see them use their length in order to acquire those blocks. It is just a different type of mentality, and I do need a team who has a little bit of an edge to them. And you know it's not going to come from Jackson Sweet Prince Darius Garland. You know it's not going to be that. You know it's not going to be Donovan Mitchell. It's not going to be Max Strus.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are certain guys that you turn to and say, you need to be more physical. You need to be meaner. And it is your Evan Mobley's, your DeAndre Hunter's. It is your Jared Allen. Those are the guys that you look to. Those are the guys who have to step up and have an edge to them. And you know what? It can be Donovan. It can be Darius. Those guys can make the adjustment to have a little bit more of a mentality to him. Jax, you probably remember, what game was it? Was it also that Pistons game Darius got up into somebody's face?
No, it was... what game was it?
The Rockets? It was one of those games.
Yeah, it was one of them. No, I think it was Toronto. Was it not?
Maybe it was, I don't know. I'm trying for the life of me to come back, but there was a moment where Darius, I don't even know that it was like a social media advertised thing, but you saw Darius start to jaw, come in between a couple of players and show a little bit of a, hey, you know, it's just not going to be that sweet.
The Pistons game, he jawed at the fan at the end of the game.
Yeah. I need you to be meaner on the court though. Like, talking to the fan after, listen, talk your talk after you hit the buzzer, hit the half court buzzer beater. Sure. I need you to be meaner on the court, which, again, doesn't even necessarily have to come between the whistles. Like, there can be a little bit of it after. You can have just a little bit of I don't know. You can just be kind of, I don't know how to put it in a great way, but you can be rude. You can be rude and just jaw. You can bump bodies. You can just kind of be an irritant. It's part of just having a meaner style to you. And if you're the Cavs, again, I think every little bit helps in that department. I think you want to become a little bit more of the irritant. You know you're playing with a chip on your shoulder. I need the team to play more. Again, from a physicality standpoint, like they have a chip on their shoulder. Because they know the mentality, I see it. But if I'm asking you to step in and deliver an elbow every once in a while, make somebody walk away from a play thinking, man, I don't want to go through that sequence again. The Cavs sort of lack that. Social media reactions, again, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Alec saying, as it regarded to our DeAndre Hunter conversation, it's not about who starts, it's about who finishes. If Hunter feels more comfortable off the bench, that's fine. And this is not going to be a direct attack at Alec, because this is something Jax brought up to me in the break as we were discussing it as well. I just don't think that's going to be the case. He's not going to be more comfortable coming off the bench, despite what you've seen this year. I don't think it was his choice to come off the bench in Atlanta. It was, oh yeah, we drafted Zachary Suchet first overall. We're going to play him, and it's going to be sort of a learn while you're in the driver's seat kind of moment for him. And DeAndre Hunter, you're the odd guy out, you're going to the bench. And that was it. I think DeAndre Hunter would probably have first to start those games, If I had to take a guess, I don't know that for sure. I don't know that you'll get that answer out of him, but at some point, I'm sure a reporter will ask him as he goes through and plays more games off the bench or he gets into the starting lineup which one he likes more, and we'll have that answer eventually. But as of right now, if you made me take a guess, as most players do, and as DeAndre Hunter has done for a majority of his basketball career, probably wants to be in the starting lineup. All right, Cavs getting ready to get underway. Coming up in about 4 minutes, Browns quarterback big board. We had Carson Wentz to the list. Jake Rill covers the Orioles at MLB.com coming up at 8 o'clock as well. It's Jake Volnick with you guys right here on Overtime. But it hasn't been great. It's just sort of been, okay, he's out there. Like this year, he played in 3 games, albeit only throwing 19 passes for 118 yards. But no touchdowns, no picks. Like, it's just overall a fairly disappointing stat line when you go through and look at it and you go, yeah, well, it's there. There's something. So as you go and you break down the way that Carson Wentz would sort of fit here, I think from a... Again, we look at this from a Kevin Stefanski standpoint because that's your head coach for next year, and we are looking for 2025 on the Browns quarterback big board. We are looking for next year what we would like to see. Sure, he would fit the system. He'd do fine. I think as a veteran quarterback who sits here at the age of 32, you plug him in there, and he's not going to look terrible. He's going to look competent. Going to complete the short passes. He can run the play action. You know he can go under center. His several years in the league will tell you that. I just think, obviously, as we talk about Carson Wentz, nothing's going to be overly exciting for you. You haven't seen anything close to the MVP-like numbers he was putting up between, oh, I mean, honestly, 2017 through 2019, where he looked pretty good. And this is the hard part, is... I think as you try to sell guys, the narrative obviously sticks there of what the off the mind, the general fan would think if you made this move. And Carson Wentz, to everybody, I don't think the majority of people remember Carson Wentz for 2017 through 2019, where it was like, oh, 33-7, 21-7, 27-7 touchdown interception ratios. He was on top of his game, leading the Eagles to the playoffs, had them competing year in and year out. It's more of, oh, here's 2020 Carson Wentz, where he threw 16 touchdowns and 15 picks. Oh, here's the guy that played for the Commanders, 11 touchdowns, 9 picks, and he didn't look good while he did it. Hey, everybody was sitting there going, yeah, he's maybe NFL caliber, good enough to be in the league. He's probably not the guy you're dying to have starting. He might be considered a top 32 quarterback in the NFL, and that's probably a stretch. If he's there, he's 29 through 32. And he's probably lower. But either way, I think that's the first part that you struggle with when you have Carson Wentz, is that, okay, I'm looking at a 32-year-old quarterback with sort of a bad image. A bad image on the football field of... You haven't brought anything to your teams in quite some time. Several years that you've played and just gotten nothing out of it. But again, the last time we saw him as a starter, well, I'm not going to sit here and try to sell to you that his time in Indianapolis was an absolute parade and the team was fantastic, because they weren't. But you go through and you have 27 touchdowns to 7 picks. Like, there was a little flash of something. And really the only chance you've gotten outside of that was your 8 games at the Commanders where, yeah, things went poorly, but it's not like the Commanders were in a prime position to succeed that year anyway. But I think that was the Taylor Heinicke year, if I'm not misunderstanding that, and I'm not misremembering. I think that was Carson Wentz for 8 games, and, oh, we'll turn to this Taylor Heinicke kid and see what he has, quote-unquote kid, because he's probably a lot older than you remember him as well. But again, we'll play this sort of in-between game and find out what happens here. And he had a little bit of a run. He had some promise, but the team went nowhere. There was not a ton of hope for that team. And a lot of that rides on the shoulders of Carson Wentz, and a lot of it just rides on what the team looked like. So yeah, I just don't think I'm overly impressed with anything that I've seen. I'm not going to sit here and try to sell you. I'm not living in my days where I saw him out of North Dakota State and thought that he was going to be a really good quarterback. We're somewhere in between there. I don't think that as we go and we look at the board, though, that he's going to fall completely behind. And he's going to be, falling at the bottom of this list among the ranks of Riley Leonard either. I think he's slightly higher than that. He puts you in a range to be competitive. He is one of these guys that are considered more of a, I think it's fair to say, probably a premium backup in the NFL. I mean, the Chiefs thought he was good enough to back up Patrick Mahomes. Not that I think that's a real fail-safe for them. I think they operate under the idea that if Patrick gets hurt, there's not really anywhere to go from there anyway. But he was good enough to the point where you roster him. And I think that plays a factor into it as well. You had him this year, and really the last 2 years in which he hasn't played. I'm not telling you he went to a quarterback factory, but he sat behind some really good quarterbacks and worked with a very talented head coaches. Because if you're going to go from L.A. with Sean McVay sitting behind Matt Stafford, who a lot of people would tell you, apparently, after my tweet yesterday of my quarterback big board, that Matthew Stafford is too low, and people don't like the fact that he's 13, even though you'd have to give him a first-round pick to get him, and he'd give you 1 to 2 years of a little something there. My bad. I'll pump the brakes. It's not my quarterback ranking or anything. I mean, hey, what do I know? But you go back, and that's a good situation for him to be in. So you have high thoughts of Sean McVay, I'm sure. You have high thoughts of Matthew Stafford, I'm sure. And then last year, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, the argument would probably be that there's no better people to learn from when it comes to quarterback in this game because that's the epitome. Those are the guys who have sat there and been there among the top for the last half decade and been a ridiculous staple in the NFL and played at the highest of levels. So I think that is obviously a major factor as well. And if you tell me, and it's hard for me to sit here and tell you no, because in a lot of ways, that's my sell on Daniel Jones. That's why Daniel Jones ends up so high on the board, is because, okay, you sat behind, I've almost forgot his name, Sam Darnold, the guy who's right behind him. You sat behind Sam Darnold for a year, but more so, you learned from Kevin O'Connell and sort of went back to quarterback rehab. Well, for Carson Wentz, you've had 2 years in two separate rehab facilities. Could you be a serviceable starter? Yes, I think if you put him lower than the idea of a serviceable starter, you're doing him a disservice because he's not going to be running around doing what he was during his championship eras, but he's not also going to go out there and probably look like a complete bum like he did when he played for the Commanders either. There's probably an in-between there. There's probably something where I think you look at a guy now who knows that more likely than not, he's got to fit into the system. He has to just accept what he is. And when we saw Carson Wentz struggle a lot, I feel like it was taking risks downfield as a member of the Colts and a member of the Commanders. It was, I could probably squeeze in this throw, and Carson Wentz couldn't squeeze in that throw. There was no chance. No chance he was getting that thing through the secondary. But he thought he could. In a lot of ways, that probably reminds you of a similar story with Jameis Winston. It's a very sort of a back and forth where you would look at him. But yeah, I just don't think you're getting that same guy either. You're getting a guy who's a couple years removed, understanding more so in his role. And if you're bringing him in, you're not asking him to be, a sort of bring it all kind of savior. Like even Jameis last year, you look at him as a member of the Browns. I'm not saying that you were looking to Jameis to save the season. But he was asked to have to do a whole lot more than what he is right now. Right? Like that is a much different situation than what you'd be going into next year with the assumption. When Jameis came in, this team was already practically in shambles. Something needed to change. Something drastic needed to change. And you were just sat there waiting, and Jameis was the guy going to walk in going, well, I need to prove that I can be a starter somewhere in this league, and here's my opportunity to do it, so let me go through and try to prove this thing. You probably would have wished that didn't happen. Carson Wentz shouldn't be the guy doing that. You would walk in with the idea that, hey, this is what we're working with. I need you to just complete the passes, hand the ball off, run the offense, and keep this thing in the ship steady. And we're just moving on for next year. We're giving you an opportunity to prove yourself a little bit. But your best option to prove yourself is showing that you can be a competent quarterback. So again, we go through and have to place him somewhere on the quarterback big board. I think the best place that you end up with Carson Wentz is right where he falls. It's the highest perception of where you're going to see, unless you're downright out of your mind, which is with Carson Wentz landing at 18, just below Jimmy Garoppolo, and just above a Dylan Gabriel, above a Joe Flacco. It's probably right where you would see him. Again, I think he's incredibly comparable to a Jimmy G that's going to get you, again, just make the right moves. Don't mess anything up. Probably slightly worse. So, again, that's where we see Carson Wentz fall on the Browns quarterback big board at 18. If you want to check out the entire thing like you always can, you're going to go out in a couple of minutes over to Volnick Jake at V-U-L-I-N-E-C Jake on X, and you'll be able to see the finale of where everything has ended up to this point. You'll be able to see who comes next. And speaking of coming next, Jake Rill covers the Orioles at MLB.com. Going to join us coming up in about 5 minutes. It's Jake Volnick with you guys right here on The Fan.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.